Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
Dan Bernstein.
Sucking the joy out of sports.
Middays on The Score.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and the first ever 8-passenger Hyundai Palisade. Dan Bernstein with you from now until noon, and we've got news. We're going to be very, very busy today. There will be all kinds of surprises and possible rearrangements of guests based on circumstances, but at the moment what we have for you is Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times at 10, Chris Mannix, senior writer at Sports Illustrated, covers the NBA. He'll join us at 10:20. Midday Midway set for 10:40. Vince Goodwill, Yahoo Sports NBA writer at 11. We will do our transitional series with Dan McNeil at 10:40 today. Check in with him and touch base to see how it is going on with him. But we got news. 312-644-6767 is the phone number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein at 670thescore.com. You want to send a text? Do so. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text 67011, the reply, message, and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein670. You have to download the radio.com app to stream The Score on your mobile devices. You can interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. Ray Diaz, the executioner, is the man on the board and doing what he does. So, the Bulls have a new guy in charge. That's what we're looking at today, and we found this out late last night. Adrian Wojnarowski and others reporting that the general manager of the Denver Nuggets, Arturas Karnišević, is going to be in charge of basketball operations for the Bulls. Now, we don't know his title. We assume that it's at least what John Paxson's title was, which was executive vice president of basketball operations. My hope is that Karnišević is installed as president of basketball operations, because this needs to be just the start. There have to be other hires involved. There have to be other departments that are reshaped, restructured, restaffed. And I'm fascinated to know, I'm sure that those are some of the discussions that are continuing today and continuing apace that will change the way we think about the Bulls. That is obviously my hope. But we don't know exactly what he's being hired to do, other than that we know he's going to be the top voice regarding Chicago Bulls basketball, and it's about damn time. He is a victory, I think. This day, this time, the fact that this is happening means something because of what you, the fan, expressed. I want to go back. What was the exact day that we have on the date on this cut? It was February. It was All-Star break. It was mid-February. But remember, it was Valentine's Day. Okay, there you go. So this goes back to Valentine's Day of 2020, when ESPN had a live production at Navy Pier. And let's replay this again, because I want to trace the roots of this. And I think you should celebrate yourself as a fan today, because let's give this a listen. We knew this at the time. This happened during our show. And we knew at the time that this had to mean something with the All-Star Game in Chicago. All of the eyes and ears of the basketball world focused on Chicago. And a chant broke out.
Zach, Stephen A. mentioned get you some help. Paxson's built a couple winners in Chicago. Do you have confidence that your GM can get you the help you need?
They might speak differently, man. But, you know, I'm with the team, man. You know, I got to put the team first. their table, man. I got to put the team first. But, you know, it's just the situation we're in right now.
Stop. They were eventually shouted down behind Zach LaVine as he's being interviewed. But that chant of fire Garpax, we noted it at the time. We said it at the time that there was meaning there. There was something changed there. Something was very clear that it had gotten from the fringes of blogs and Twitter and fan fiction to the mainstream. Something broke through that day, and it carried through. And I'm not diminishing the economic impact of the empty seats at United Center, because obviously when ownership attends games, when they turn the television on, they can see that, and that matters. I'm not diminishing that. The whole, yeah, hit them in the pocketbook, that's the only way they understand. It's not the only way they understand. Fans were heard. This is a victory. And remember, this isn't with a change in ownership. As we compare this to the Blackhawks, when it was the death of Bill Wirtz, or to the Cubs, when it was Sam Zell selling the team to the Ricketts family, and the Ricketts family deciding to do business differently. When you have a continuity of ownership and this happening, that means something broke through. Something, your voice, got through. Little things, little ways to communicate, whether it's social media, or the way things are shared, when the guy wearing the 86 Garpax shirt gets kicked out. Eventually, it starts to matter, and it mattered in this case. So here he is. Here is Arturas Karnišovas, and I can't wait to find out his title. Because remember, when the Cubs made their moves, they interviewed Jason McLeod, they interviewed Jed Hoyer, and there's Theo Epstein, and then all of a sudden they had all of them. They hired everybody. So if the Bulls want sweeping change here, this is when you have bring in all these big names, throw around titles, throw around money. You got enough of it to spend to revamp everything. And with everything that we read about how they have been doing business with so many things stripped down. This is, you know, Cowley is going to be on at 10. He mentions today, the Bulls have historically kept a small front office with only a handful of personnel wearing multiple hats. That's just not the modern NBA, as the league has watched front offices across the board expand in the last 5 years. Well, what the hell have they been doing? Why? Why have they historically kept a small front office? If the league is doing business, expanding their businesses and bringing in all sorts of minds and communication and ideas and doing all this stuff, why haven't the Bulls? Why did it take this? Regardless, it did. It did. And last night, something really important happened. Here's something else, too. We owe Jim Boylan a debt of gratitude. And don't just give me some latitude on this. Had they hired a competent head coach, it is possible that some of the glaring structural problems, some of the problems within this organization, that the everything that needs to change might have been camouflaged. A competent coach might have been able to keep the charade going for a little while, keep the facade tacked up to a building that was increasingly in tatters. A competent coach may have hidden what was wrong. Jim Boylan's inability to coach helped accelerate this. That helped lay bare everything that was wrong.
I coach by faith.
Yes, I know. And now you'll coach somewhere else by faith. Not official yet, but I'll say this right now. If Jim Boylan is retained, they've hired all the wrong people, and this thing was a complete mistake. And anybody, my guess is that anybody walking in that door, they already know, has got a list of other executives and coaches that they want to hire, and that's part of the interview process. And it's been a sort of strange process, too. The fact that it involved Danny Ferry was surprising to me because of the way he lost his job and the terrible judgment that he showed in Atlanta, and I thought he was toxic. I thought that would be a guy you wouldn't want to reach out and touch at all. The 815 says, why extend Jim B recently then? Paxson and Foreman did that. They're out. This is part of the punishment for that. Understand, 815, that that's part of the reason why. That was one of these what-the-hell-are-you-doing moments that helped accelerate this. The whole Boylan presence, the fact that at any time he was thought of as a competent head coach and then extended, is part of what helped show everyone why this had to be done and what the difference was going to be. The titles are going to matter. The size of this move matters. It can't just be Arturis Karnišovas. It can't. There's going to be a lot of people involved. There's going to be a lot of new voices involved. And it's how that's managed that matters. Remember, Karnišovas comes from the Houston culture with Daryl Morey, Sam Hinkie, Gerson Rosas, who is the well-respected executive in charge of the Minnesota Timberwolves right now. And I think it's important that you hear from the new head of Bulls basketball in his own voice. He talked with Chris Mannix, who's going to be joining this show at 10:20. Chris Mannix, senior writer at Sports Illustrated and also the host of the podcast The Vertical. I want you to hear from him here. And this is a couple of minutes from Arturis Karnišovas with Chris Mannix talking about his style and how he operates and what he's learned about how good teams are run.
Life as a scout is obviously a lot of travel. However, you know, when I joined Houston, I was exposed to a lot of things, you know, not only international scouting, but also college and NBA, NBA games, being involved. Inclusivity was one of the things that I appreciate from, you know, Daryl Morey and Gerson, that, you know, in that time, actually Sam Hinkie was also, you know, executive and with the Rockets. Inclusivity was, you know, you included in all decision making and getting experience, you know, being in the draft room, being around trade deadline and being around free agency. So you'll learn a lot of things and pretty quickly. So, you know, as you know, every year would improve and, you know, they would give me more and more responsibility. So got to the point, you know, I was, you know, director of scouting for the Rockets and running, you know, pre-draft workouts and being more and more involved with them.
Every GM is different. They all have their own different philosophies on how to build a team. Mm-hmm. Working in Houston under Daryl, one of the more aggressive general managers I know, always looking, never in the mood to rebuild, always trying to stay above 500 in contention. What did you take away from that experience that stays with you?
Well, learning from that situation is that you can come up with 60, 80, 100 ideas, and one of them might stick. But it's a relentless try of trying to make things happen, you know, that I got from experience in Houston is that, you know, other teams, you know, they don't want to call and they don't want to kind of lose the negotiations by engaging teams. It was opposite, you know, they would, again, they would call every team and constantly and, you know, look for ideas how they can make their team better. And that's what I took, and still till this day, I also believe in, you know, come up with 100 ideas, maybe one will stick. Mm-hmm. So that's what I took from the Rockets.
Working in Denver, it seems like it's a similar type of atmosphere that, you know, Tim and Josh Kroenke, they seem like a very inclusive bunch that encourages that type of that atmosphere.
Well, absolutely. You know, you're trying to develop your personnel as well, you know, by including them in, you know, decision making and, you know, ability to voice their opinions, even if they are the only ones that believe in it. You know, that can trigger ideas as well.
It takes a strong hand to manage a group like that. And it sounds like from his experiences and from the other people who have been part of his managerial tree, that Arturis Karnišovas has been a part of some very strong examples for how these front offices are supposed to be run, rather than what the Bulls were that was largely cloistered and insular and reactive. He's talking about the opposite. He's saying, feel free to share what you think, be yourself, don't try to fit in, don't try to make yourself part of this culture, go ahead and give me what you got, and I'll make the decision for what's best for the organization. How about the idea of aggressively calling other teams a lot? That's how you do that. That's the kind of relationships that you have. And remember, this was the guy that foisted Doug McDermott on the Bulls, where they were able to turn the return on that into Jusuf Nurkić and Gary Harris. Now that he was on that side in Denver that was able to fleece the Bulls on that deal. And the Bulls don't forget that. They know they got screwed on that deal on the other end of the phone. But that's what teams do. You call, build relationships, you build trust, you actively always try to improve your team. What little things can we do today and around the edges and with the salary cap and with our scouts all over the world? What can we do today to get us closer to winning a championship? That's what that sounds like to me. And that's exciting stuff. It's a good day. You helped do this. The fans were heard. You were heard. Whether it's the Fire Guard Packs chant or
I got to put the team first. But, you know, it's just the situation we're in right now.
Stop. And whether or not they're actually ridden out of town on a rail or tarred and feathered and however you want that to look, they're sidelined. They're out. They're marginalized. That even if John Paxson is retained in some way, every single report suggests his input to the team, his input to the operation, will only be at the behest of Arturis Karnišovas. It's only if he wants, and it will be his job to either listen to it or not. Whether it's Doug Collins, Jim Paxson, everybody, this is Arturis Karnišovas' operation right now. And you may not prevent Jerry Reinsdorf from calling John Paxson every once in a while. He's, you know, still around, but he is effectively sidelined. The Garpax era, as we know it, is now over. And you helped bring that on. And boy, we owe Jim Boylan a debt of gratitude for being the accelerant in the dumpster fire that helped show some things. We've added Will Perdue to the lineup. He's going to join us at 9:40. But coming up in just a bit, I want you to hear more. There's a money chunk here of Arturis Karnišovas talking about building an organization. And I think it gives us a window into what he's going to do. You're going to want to hear from him. So don't go anywhere. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.
Welcome to Lithuania. Welcome to Lithuania. Welcome to Lithuania, the land of your beautiful basketball.
I think we'll be hearing a lot of that. I forgot the context of the Lithuanian basketball song, but I know that there are some excited broadcasters very, very proud of the Lithuanian basketball tradition, because it is a strong one. One of the greatest players to ever walk the face of the earth, Arvydas Sabonis, is from Lithuania, as is Šarūnas Marčiulionis, who was a family friend of Arturis Karnišovas. And we need to make sure we're right on the pronunciation. When he played, when he was at Seton Hall, they were on TV a lot. That was the days of, you know, Big Monday on ESPN, and there was lots of Seton Hall on TV because they were such a strong program after Andrew Gaze and took them to the finals. He was always Karnišovas, and I guess as now we know, the more traditional, the more correct Lithuanian pronunciation would be Karnišovas. So he will be that from here on out. He talked with Chris Mannix on the podcast, The Vertical, and we heard some of it before the break. I'm Dan Bernstein, by the way, Sports Radio 670, The Score, covering this big story up until noon. We got a ton of guests coming up. We got all sorts of people weighing in on the fact that the Chicago Bulls are making this move, and I can't wait to get a job title. I want to find out exactly what they're saying it is that he does and how many other hires he's going to get, and I hope that thing out impressively with a big and new footprint. But when he sat down on The Vertical, he also talked at length about building a winning organization and what goes into that. Here's how he described his thoughts on that.
I think you take away from each situation certain things, but you build your own, you know, kind of world and how you would do things. you don't become them, people that you work for. I think you just take things away and apply it in your own setting. So I think I would be, obviously different by doing things. But, inclusivity for me is a huge thing, is, hiring, intelligent, passionate people. It's another thing of mine, and, just being fair with people and put them in a position to do their jobs, not to, micromanage them, so it's just, I think with personnel and surrounding yourself with people is the way you do with players. You're trying to project what they're going to be in 2-3 years, and hopefully you select personnel that have a potential to be, GMs also in the future, mm-hmm. and you're going to help them to get there, and then be proud when they, obviously accomplish that. So
it gets harder and harder to project players, doesn't it, with how young they are when they're coming to this league?
It is, but it's fun, and you have your kind of database in your head and your mistakes and your successes, and you just take away from each situation and, what I said wrong, or about the player that I said he's going to make it and he didn't, what were the reasons, in success stories, how there's a lot of luck obviously involved, and you just make informative decisions, and then hopefully that will stick, and the luck is part of it.
Arturas Karnišovas wants to hire smart, passionate people, and I am all for that. It sounds like that there's going to be a dynamic way of doing NBA business that others have been doing. The fact that the Bulls have been running this stripped down operation for so long, this little front office with so many people and so few people in charge of so many things, that's about to change. I'd like to think that he doesn't take this job, AK, as you call him, doesn't take this job without assurances that he's going to be able to model what Daryl Morey has done. And these connections to guys like Morey and Hinkie and Rosas, these are all smart, passionate people in their own right. And before you ask, this guy, he's a former player. He was a former pro player. Is he more on the scouting side? When you work with Daryl Morey, you understand analytics. And it isn't just that. He's a math guy. That if you read the stories about Karnišovas's time at Seton Hall, that he sort of learned English on the fly academically. He was always he came up as a math guy, when he was growing up. So that was always his side of things. He's more of a left brain thinker than a right brain thinker. So it isn't the typical situation where you get a former player who like only knows the player side of things and only knows scouting side as opposed to analytics side. You're on Daryl Morey. Believe me, you're going to understand the math and understand analytics, and whether that's math regarding salaries, the cap, and contracts, or whether or not how we measure, how we look at the game. And if you are already on the Bulls and in the analytics department, this is the kind of thing where if, in fact, you're in a position to keep your job and you've got a new guy in charge, it's going to care a whole lot more about the work that you do. It's an exciting time. 312-644-6767 is our number. And I want to find out what you think, because you're going to get what you want. You are getting the sidelining of Foreman and Paxson. The end of that era is upon us. And I think the voice of the fan took several years, took a long time, but it's finally been heard. Tony is in Lake Forest. He's on the Score. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? I got a question. So I kind of feel like the information is a little incomplete right now. I thought I heard on Mullion Haw that he was vice president of basketball operations. Is that correct? Not like actual president, but vice president? Or is it
we don't have a title yet.
Unclear?
Unclear on the title. He's in charge of basketball operations. We know that.
But do you think that if Paxson and Doug Collins are even still in the building, does that mean that there's still like a couple of fingers kind of still in the pie there a little bit, kind of still, quote unquote, guiding AK a little bit, like about how the Bulls do things? Or do you really think this is a clean cut break and we're just done with the old ways?
He's in charge. he will, if he wants to talk to Doug Collins, if he wants to keep any of these guys around, he will. And if he doesn't, he won't. That's, as I understand this now, it's up to him. And if John Paxson is kept as a nominal emeritus advisor to the Reinsdorfs, he can't keep John Paxson from talking to Jerry Reinsdorf or talking to Michael Reinsdorf. But I don't think that's going to change his level of authority. It's clear he likes a large number of voices around. And ideally, he's confident enough in himself to just not care. He is running Bulls basketball right now. And he may talk to John Paxson, and it's up to him whether or not what Paxson has to say about anything, if he wants to even call him. I mean, he could be down the hall, and he can never stop by his office, never text him, never call him, never email him. That's going to be up to him. So I'm pleased with it. I've talked to a couple people that I know around basketball who have nothing but high praise for Arturis Karnišovas. The only issue is his willingness to be the forward-facing face of the team. He does not have a lot of experience in dealing regularly with the media, in presenting organizational philosophy, sort of outwardly presenting stuff like that. So that would be, if you're talking about my list of concerns, well, English is not his first language. He's worked very, very hard ever since he came over here, since he defected. Because remember, at the time when he left Lithuania for Seton Hall, that was still at the time, I have to look exactly at the timeline for how it all worked, but I believe that he was still talking about part of the Soviet Union. So it was a defection for him to come over and eventually establish citizenship here. And I think he lives in suburban Denver at the moment, but is the communicative aspect may be something that he learns on the fly. I don't think he's going to have people, and I hope he doesn't want people talking for him, because that's a really important part of this job, is how you communicate what you're doing to the fans. So we'll see. And how about this detail in Cowley's story here? This is great. A source told the Sun-Times Thursday morning that Jim Boylan is already concerned that he will be ousted. I think it's a good concern.
That's the next step.
Yes. The next step would be go over there. He was hoping to sit down with his new bosses and discuss his year and a half on the job. Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to be necessary. I don't really need to hear anything from Jim Boylan, about Jim Boylan, and I don't think that helps anything. I don't think that gets this Bulls regime closer to winning a championship. Jim, thank you, and Godspeed with whatever the next step is in your There is a name involved, though, in Karnišovas' history. He was a teammate at Seton Hall with Adrian Griffin. So I would keep that name top of mind. I would keep Adrian Griffin out there as a possibility, someone very well respected around the NBA, as somebody who he may want as part of this, wherever it may go. And it's going to be exciting and interesting to see how quickly they move, how flexible they are. But God, it's been so long since we've been able to feel good about the Bulls. Even as optimistic as I was looking at the roster going into the season, and after an offseason where I thought there were some things that went kind of well, did okay, let's also not lose sight of this. As we've been talking about throughout this week, as we've been vetting some of these new managerial possibilities, what's the phrase that we heard regarding player health? Upright and available. Upright and available. What is he going to do? I want to hear from him. What is he going to do to make sure that injury continue to bedevil this team? You want to find smart, passionate people? Find smart and passionate people in athletic training, in medicine, in preparation, in everything that you do, whatever, inside the box, outside the box, anything you've got to do to make sure that those excuses, that rationale, whatever it is, and it was always something for years and years and years. It was always, well, we didn't. Derek got hurt. And then Derek got hurt again. And Joakim Noah had a minutes limit because he was hurt. And that's why we had to run down and pull on the coach's tie. Or Tom Thibodeau ground everybody down because there were too many minutes and they all ended up hurt. And the playoff series against the Nets when everybody's throwing up in the garbage can and Luol Deng has the bad spinal tap and all that. It's enough of that. Everybody's got injuries. There should be redundant systems built in to allow you to keep developing and get guys upright, get guys vertical, make sure that you have all hands on deck when you can. And that is an organizational thing. And this is an opportunity. This is that chance. This is that chance to look at everything and to talk to the smartest people in every aspect of scouting, of the way you're doing your basketball business. If this is going to be the guy who is president of basketball operations, I don't want to get too hung up on the words, but I think it would be meaningful to hand somebody that title and just say, this is yours. And it sounds like they are. It sounds like that he's going to be allowed to choose the advice that he wants, the whatever he solicits will be his decision, his arrangement. There's going to be, I think, are we disbanding the Player Leadership Council now? Is that officially done, or does Boylan have to walk out the door before we do that? I got to get a ruling on that one. 312-644-6767 is our number. Here's the plan for today. We're going to talk to Will Perdue in just a few minutes, get his thoughts on the big changes. Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times, who has had news on the bleeding edge of this thing even throughout this morning, he's joining us at 10. Chris Mannix, senior writer of Sports Illustrated covering the NBA and the Vertical podcast, he's at 10:20. We also have Vince Goodwill at 11, and we're continuing to remain flexible as we get opportunities to talk to others as well. Arturis Karnišovas is the man in charge of Bulls basketball, waiting to get everything official and find out how else this is being restructured. But it's a good day because the Garpax era is effectively now, as you wanted it to be for so long, over. I'm Dan Bernstein. More to come on The Score.
In 2 years, we really completely turned the roster over. I do think that given some of the versatility, we'll probably play small at times, and we're still missing a piece in terms of, you know, our wing depth with Chandler Hutchinson, who's been out the whole preseason. When we get him back in the fold, you know, he gives us a little bit of a different element too. So, you know, on paper, it's all good. We're 0-0, so everybody's, you know, feeling good about things. But, you know, we've got to come together on the floor, and that's always the biggest thing as a team.
That was John Paxson with Mulligan Haw in October, and obviously it didn't happen. They didn't come together on the floor. Everything fell apart completely, and that has led us to today and regime change. Long anticipated, much wanted, and finally realized regime change. Arturis Karnišovas is going to be handed the reins of Bulls basketball. And here to talk about that is the guy you hear talking about Bulls basketball before, during, and after games on NBC Sportsnet, Will Perdue. He is on Twitter at Will_Perdue32. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Well, Will, this day's been a long time coming, and you and I have had a lot of conversations about the direction of this basketball team, and this is going to be, at the very least, a breath of fresh air as we figure out what this man's going to do, who he's going to hire, and where they're going to go. What are your thoughts when you found out the actual name?
Well, I think that the Bulls fans should be very excited about the ability to land this guy and to bring him in. I understand that, you know, people may be thinking, well, it's not the first guy. At the end of the day, we don't know that. And I think that we should be very happy, and I think that we could end up being the Seattle Supersonics in the fact that we had the second pick and got Kevin Durant. Because anything, and when I started hearing, you know, Karnišovas' name, I made a few phone calls to some friends of mine, not only in the league, but to guys that are some general managers for other teams. And everybody spoke highly of him. He's been at every level, started out in the league, and worked his way through a couple different teams. And I think this is a solid hire for the Bulls. I think a guy that has a good knowledge. And probably the biggest thing that everybody talked about was his ability to identify talent, but also the relationship with the players that he's had over the years with the teams that he's worked with. And I think that's very important.
He played college basketball with Adrian Griffin, who was an assistant under Tom Thibodeau and is considered a riser among the ranks of NBA coaches. It might be too early to start talking about the coaches and the coaching staff, but I'm wondering what other connections are out there. Are we able to sort of project some possibilities here for some other Bulls, be it front office or on the bench?
Well, that's what we don't know, you know, because when I was talking to these other general managers and members of the league, they all said, well, listen, everybody has their little circle. When they're in that position, you know, when he was an assistant at Denver, you know, he wasn't the head guy, but they all are developing their inner circle that if I ever get a job where I can start hiring guys, these are the guys I'm going to hire. And we don't know who those guys are. But also at the same time, just like what the Bulls experienced, Barnasolos may have an idea of who he wants to bring in to be the general manager, who he wants to bring in to fill certain positions. But there may be teams and guys that he's identified that the teams that they work for won't let him, or for one reason or another, because of their direction that they're in with the organization they're currently with, they may not want to make that change. So we don't know 100%, you know, exactly who he's going to bring in. But, again, that being said, I think that the Bulls should be applauded for making the change. And I also think people need to understand that John Paxson was the one that was pushing for this. And, you know, he'll have some role in the organization. We don't know what that is. But my understanding is that he is not going to be the guy looking over Carson Silver's shoulder, criticizing everything and anything he does. If Karnisovas asks him for his opinion, he's going to give it. But otherwise, now he's turning over the reins, and he's going to allow Karnisovas to do his job to bring in the people he wants. And that way, if this thing doesn't work out, it's one guy's responsibility and one guy's only.
One of the best aspects of this is the fact that no opinion that anybody in the building has about any of the players on the roster has to matter. It might if Kurnatovas wants it to, but it doesn't have to. And that means that all the new people can look at all the tape, every game that's been played. And, you know, we heard Paxson talking about Chandler Hutchison, whoever it may be, whether it's Shaq Harrison or Kobe White or Wendell Carter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen, anybody involved, they can say, you know what, this guy's been used improperly, or people don't see this trait that I see and an ability to exploit something that we think we can use. The fact that now there's going to be consistency in ideas, in philosophy with the coaching staff, and an understanding of what we do with this player and how we get the most out of this player. All bets are off right now. Whatever our definitions are, whatever people thought, now this is all natural resources now, and everything can be open to restructuring, rebuilding, even down to what positions they're supposed to be playing. I think that's really exciting. I just wonder how terrifying it can be, if not exhilarating, from that player's perspective.
Well, you test the player's confidence. I can promise you that. Because now, You just hit it right on the head, Dan. All these players, regardless of how good they are, whether it's Zach LaVine to Shaq Harrison to Otto Porter, who they traded for, your confidence now is going to be tested. Because, yeah, you're telling yourself, I have this specific skill set. I feel like I can do this. I'm making this much money. But at the end of the day now, that's the history is now just that, history. We're back to square one. And hopefully, as you talked about, every player from top to bottom, Zach LaVine now to Lauri Markkanen, hopefully these guys all see this as A, fresh start, B, a clean slate, C, motivation to realize that, hey, I have to prove myself to this guy, not only on the floor, but off the floor. But let's also be very clear. A, we don't know how much, you know, Karnisovas as a whole knows about this team. I can guarantee you that he's been on the fast track ever since that his name has been mentioned and the Bulls reached out. He's been watching a lot of tape. But there's also enough tape out there. There's enough information out there that he will know, and the people that he hires will know who these players are individually. Now the decision needs to be made. Was the offense they were running correct for this group of players? Was this player, as you mentioned, being used correctly? Do I think that his skill set is different than what they were using him for? And even quite possibly, do I feel like this guy has a specific skill set that works better somewhere else for a team or an organization that could use this guy to possibly be the missing piece to win a championship where we can get back significant assets? Because that's the other thing, as you talked about. I don't think any player on this roster currently is safe. I don't think there's any player that somebody's going to walk in and say, this guy is staying. This is the guy we're building around. I mean, as you talk about, A, it's exciting, but also there's a lot of unknown. And we as, I'll say my position right now as a fan of this organization and wanting this team to get back to relevancy, how long is that going to take? Because are we going to actually go backwards before we go forwards? Or is this guy going to be able to work magic very quickly, whether it's make trades, bring in the right coach? There's a lot of unknowns that can happen between now and whether it's the end of this season, which I think is pretty much over for the Bulls, and the beginning of next season, and we don't even know when that is. So there's a lot of unknowns, and I guarantee you that the ball is already rolling as far as the direction he thinks he can go and who he wants to bring in.
I also find it fascinating that he prepared scouting reports on so many of the Bulls players. Because the Bulls roster is so young, he's got a file on every one of these guys when they came out, what he thought of them in his role, whether it was director of scouting when he was with Houston or as general manager when he was in Denver. So it could be that he watches tape of the Bulls and he's like, yeah, they're using this guy wrong. I always saw him as this and they're using him as this. And maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. But the fact is, he's got his own well-researched opinion of what these guys were, and maybe a lot of this is undoing some things that were done before they could be rebuilt into what he envisioned.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, that's kind of like, as you just mentioned, that's kind of like sometimes a college coach's mentality. Because a lot of times when you talk to these college coaches who bring in 4- and 5-star guys, they talk about, okay, hey, I got to break this guy down, take away his bad habits, and then build him back up and be the player that I think he can be, the guy that we recruited, the image that we see him becoming. And I think that's why I mentioned, do we actually see a little bit of a recession, and not necessarily in games won or lost, but in the sense of identifying roles, identifying what guys can do. Because we have to be honest with ourselves here. When Otto Porter opts in, which everybody I've talked to, 100% of the people that I've talked to, said that he would be foolish not to opt in on his contract. When he opts in, that pretty much locks the Bulls up. So the only way they can have any kind of movement is by obviously moving up in the draft, possibly getting a really, really high draft pick. And when I say high, I don't mean just a lottery pick, 1 or 2, because technically, the draft in itself is not supposed to be, you know, an impact draft. There may be a couple impact players, but on a whole, somewhat weak, meaning not that these guys can't play, but compared to years past, not as good, or the ability to make some trades. And that also, let's be honest, trades are about developing relationships with other general managers, other presidents, other organizations to make those trades. Because whether people want to agree with it or not, sometimes trades aren't made because it's personal. So what kind of relationship has this guy built as he's gone from team to team and as he's developed himself in Denver?
I'm glad you said that, because we heard him talk about the front offices in which he's participated and how they're constantly on the phone, whether it's not reactive. It's not, well, I guess we got to call some people about this. He said always thinking, always calling another executive with an idea. Say, hey, would this make both of us better? Is this something you might want to talk about? If this guy is this something you want to talk about down the line? That it's a dynamic and ongoing process that it sounds to me like the Bulls hadn't really engaged in, that there were times and places that they, maybe on draft night, they would get involved in some things here or there or leading up to things, but that the job, and it may be more the job of the general manager that he hires to be that communicator on an everyday basis, but it sure sounds like in when he discussed it himself, that Karnišovas wants to be this ongoing, fluid, always thinking about possibilities kind of operation, and I think it's about damn time, frankly.
Well, and the other question is, Dan, what's the time frame here? Because what kind of parameters are being set on him as he comes in? Because you and I both know all the fans, they want this guy to hit a home run on the first pitch. But is he giving, or should I say, has he been given the assurances that you have time to do this the right way? Now, the fans don't want time. They want this thing to turn around immediately. But you and I also know that you can build a championship team by hitting doubles and singles, by advancing runners. It's not sexy, but it can be done. And we also know that it's a copycat league, and fans are wanting him to make that trade like Toronto did. Can the Bulls make the trade to bring in the one player that will lead them to the promised land next year? I think they have to remove that thought from how they think, and they have to look at the bigger picture, because now there's a lot of work to be done, because Toronto was a playoff team before they made that trade. The Bulls are not a playoff team. So there's work that needs to be done. Do they have talent? They absolutely have talent, but their talent is also young. So now, probably first and foremost, before we talk about trades and who are they going to bring in and the players they're going to bring in, I think it's more important about he has to identify the right coach for the personnel that he has currently. And are the Bulls, as an organization, willing to pay that guy to bring him in so he cannot say no, put him in a position where he has to say yes?
Well, we'll find out, and we're looking forward to finding out more about this ongoing front office regime change. We appreciate the time, Will, and we'll talk again soon.
Well, I'm glad that we're talking about the Bulls. I'm excited about the move. I'm also sad because John Paxson was the guy that I sat next to in the locker room at the old stadium, and he opened up his home to me and kind of taught me a lot about the league. But I think at the end of the day, we all know what's happened over the last couple years, but let's also remember that Pax was the guy that was pushing for this change, and Pax is the guy that has now removed himself from making these decisions. And I also know he's very disappointed that he couldn't be the guy to get them back to where they wanted to get to. And he's willing, in this case, you can honestly say willing to accept defeat. And I know that's something that really bothers him, and he hopes that this guy will get them to where he couldn't.
Well said, Will. Thank you.
All right. You got it, Dan.
That is Will Perdue. Coming up next, Joe Colley of the Sun-Times, who's been continuing to break news on this front. He will have all the latest on the change in the Bulls basketball operations department. New blood, and we hope, new hope. Joe Colley, next on The Score.